Hello. Welcome to Rather Good Chat, episode 13. Today, we are discussing trees. And I'm Joel.
And I'm Dave.
Hooray, David. How are you today, David?
Silky.
Are you really silky? Because I was just talking to you about how disgustingly ill you are today.
Oh, yes, I've got a terrible cold.
So bad that I wondered if we should actually record this podcast, but you said we'll plough on and we'll just make your illness a feature, right?
If you can ignore me sniffling and coughing and crying in the background throughout most of it, that'd be grand.
Yeah. Being just generating literal buckets of snot and bailing them out of the window as we were talking earlier.
That's true, yes.
Yeah,
yeah, getting set literal, up. Literal buckets. I have a series of buckets lined up next to me right now.
Yeah, it's unfortunate you're on the land now because your house is gradually disappearing beneath the rising tide of snot that you're throwing buckets out the window. It's coming out of your nose like a brook, like a bubbling brook. If you were still on a boat, obviously, you'd just be rising with the tide of snot, but eventually you'll be overwhelmed, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's also dissolving the foundations of the house as well.
Oh dear, is your snot particularly corrosive?
Oh yeah, it's awful. Gosh. It's sort of like you can see the steam rising off it. Or I guess not the steam, but whatever it's dissolving underneath the chemical reaction causing some kind of incredibly toxic gas.
What does it do to your flesh then, Dave?
Turns it into silk.
Oh, and that's why you're so silky.
Yeah.
Like a parachute, like a human parachute.
Exactly like that, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Silk moth silk or spider silk?
I haven't actually investigated, but I should probably spider silk, I'd imagine.
Hey, this brings me nicely in a seamless segue onto trees. Have we discussed how there's lots of mulberry trees in England, ancient mulberry trees? Have we talked about that before?
No, we haven't, no.
Oh, okay. Well, that's quite handy. Because the mulberry tree is a tree, and that is the subject of our discussion. And the reason that segue works is that the silk moth, the larvae of the silk moth, which is what produces the silk that we all use, feeds exclusively on the leaf of the white mulberry tree.
Presumably that's the silk worm, I assume.
Silk worm is the larva of the silk moth, yeah, the silk worm. And for ages untold, the means of production of silk was a closely guarded secret. Over in the Far East, in modern-day China, that kind of area. And the Silk Road, named for the fact that silk was transported along it, although lots of other things happened along the Silk Road as well.
Was made entirely of worms.
Was made of worms. Worms, 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 worms!
Worms, 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 worms!
Worms! And, through an act of espionage, an English agent managed to smuggle some silkworms out and into England. And in an effort to kickstart a silk industry, a domestic silk industry in England, King, whichever king it was, decreed that loads of mulberry trees be planted around the country. And it turned out that they were black mulberries, which are the kind of mulberries you get here.
Yeah.
Which produced the delicious fruit, the mulberry fruit. I've planted a couple myself in my garden.
Right.
Of different varieties of black mulberry. But the moths won't eat them, or the silkworms won't eat them. They'll only eat the white mulberry, which grows in China. So we now, in this country, have dotted all over the country several hundred-year-old mature mulberry trees, which are local features wherever they are, as a result of this failed and misinformed attempt to kickstart a silk industry through espionage.
So lots of lovely mulberry trees, but a woefully undeveloped silk industry.
And some very annoyed silk moths.
Yeah. I can only imagine.
Yeah. Complaining heartily about the quality of service. Yeah.
So is this smuggled out as an act of espionage? Do you have any details about how they were smuggled out? Was it like down the trousers?
I can't remember. I think they were in a box.
Under a hat. Cunning.
Yeah, which is the last place you'd think to look for silkworms. Yeah. But I mean, I'm going to, in the absence, like, we're not allowed to Google stuff, right?
So yeah, no.
Yeah, so in the absence of either being able to remember how it was done or being able to check, I'm going to confidently assert that he put the box under his hat and he wore a large hat. Yeah.
A very, very large square hat.
Yes, a box-shaped hat.
Hmm.
And nobody thought to question him. So as I recall, again, I'm definitely straying into the area of things that may or may not be true, but I'm going to say this is definitely true. Seeing as we're discussing trees, domestic apples started out in Asia and were planted along the Silk Road, along those ancient trading routes, so that people would have some fruit to sustain them on the roads. And that's the kind of way they found their way gradually to Europe.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
That's interesting.
It is, isn't it? And may or may not be true.
what kind of fruits?
I mean, it might have been plums or something, but no, I think it was apples. What kind of fruits? You know, like pre-domestic apples. So as they were probably not
feral
as nice.
Feral apples.
Yeah, you know, with like really bad attitudes.
Yeah.
Hey, while we're talking about apples, I know that you know, other people may not know, that I am a bit of an enthusiast for fruit trees. But I recently discovered that there's a variety of apple, which I can't quite remember the name of, but it's definitely a russet. I'm going to call it the knobbly russet. It's something like that, the knobbly russet or similar, which is the ugliest apple in the world.
Oh, wow.
It's really ugly, right? You look at it, it's kind of, it's got that kind of sandpapery russet skin texture. But it's all kind of, it looks all misshapen and knobbly and warty and kind of vaguely sort of melted and just ill, right?
Are you sure it's an apple?
It's definitely an apple, but it looks awful. And it's bred and has been cultivated specifically like that because people don't steal it.
What, a sort of anti-scrumping
Yeah, it's measure. An anti-scrumpable, yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. They taste so lovely, apparently. But
so mischievous children break into the orchard and they take one look at an apple and go, oh, no, oh, God. I'm just going to go to the shop and get some crisps.
Yeah, or you just plant it somewhere where people can lean over a hedge or, you know what I mean? Anywhere you don't want people nicking your apples, you have a problem with people scrumping your apples.
We have...
Plant a knobbly russet.
I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast. No, I don't think we have, but we have, in my village, we've got a community orchard.
Oh, right, nice.
Which is nice. We've got like a bit in the park that's just filled with apple trees and we just have apples.
Brilliant.
Free apples.
Is it all apples or are there other fruits?
All apples, just apple trees, yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what any of the varieties are or has that knowledge been lost in time?
They are all forbidden apples.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
No knobbly russets.
Not to us. Not to us, we're allowed them, but anyone from outside the village, they are forbidden.
What happens if an outsider tries to eat one of your apples?
Oh, then we do the ritual. The village elders line up and wearing their hideous animalistic masks and the interloper is brought before them.
And, I would, yeah.
Can then he's lashed to a tree and set on fire.
Right. I mean, that would sounds like it would damage the tree, if I'm honest.
No,
sounds
they're
a bit
pretty
counterproductive.
Hardy trees.
Okay.
It helps.
I mean, I think I'd be tempted, if I was you, to have a word with the elders and suggest amending the ritual, because you could save those outsiders for the wassail, couldn't you? And because they'd make better offerings than toast, surely.
Yes, yeah.
If you're just shoving toast up for the spirits, surely some delicious man flesh would be a better offering.
Yeah, we might have to explain what a wassail is.
We did wassailing in our earlier episode. I think we can safely assume anyone who's listening has listened to every word we've ever spoken, right?
Did we? Like, I know we recorded something about wassailing, but I don't know.
Oh,
think
have
it,
we never actually
out.
Discussed wassailing on this podcast?
No,
no we haven't, have
no.
we?
No, we chatted about it while we were, like, starting the podcast, but I don't think we ever...
Oh, we never actually recorded it in a, in a useful podcast way.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry for anybody listening. I'm assuming you know all about the wassail when you don't. We've been wassailing.
Yes, both of us independently went wassailing this year.
Yeah. We are wassailing. We are wassailing.
Wassailing.
It isn't anything to do with the sea, which is slightly confusing because it sounds like sailing, but
it isn't. Across the orchard.
You see. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, well, sailing is a particularly strange ancient British tradition where
nothing strange about it, in my opinion.
No, I suppose that's a context-based judgment, isn't it?
Hey, by the way, we're still on subject, right? We're still on topic. It's trees.
That's
great.
True. Yes, it is trees. Apple trees are a type of tree.
It's
fact
true.
There. Fact to you.
Good fact. Good tree fact, Dave. Good tree science fact.
Yeah, so sailing's a really old tradition where you sort of you bless the apple trees, or, well, not really bless, you sort of protect them from the evil spirits. And what it is a tradition where everyone gets together and makes a huge noise, so banging pans and blowing whistles and
maybe you should just describe what your wassail was like, because I feel like we're not doing it justice by just going straight.
No, you're
into
right. Okay, so I went to my very first wassail this year. Mm. It was back in January, not long after New Year. So I turned up, me and my partner and our progeny, to like a village event, which was in the evening. It was like midwinter, so dark and cold, and we got there and there were like 50 people or so milling about, and our community orchard's at the top of a hill. So we all got together, and then a man painted green, wearing an elaborate hat and a costume, with a drum strapped to him, marched us up the hill where we made a huge amount of noise to scare off the evil spirits who might be menacing the apples. And we got to the orchard. And then we all sang a couple of songs, and there was some poetry recited. And then we made a big noise. And then the village maiden appeared, who was a delightful little girl. And her job was to put a piece of toast in the tree, because that's part of it, apparently.
That's how you appease evil spirits, right? So, isn't it that there's two kinds? There's the evil spirits you want to scare away, and then there's the good spirits that you want to keep on side.
Well, this is why the man was painted green, right? He represents the green man, who is like a sort of traditional folk elder god. We talked about folklore in a previous episode. We didn't mention this at all.
No, that's amazing, isn't it? It's almost like we don't go on a laser-focused deep dive into our declared subject. Yeah.
I don't know what you mean. I try very hard to do exactly that.
Yeah. So some people who are unfamiliar with ancient British pagan rituals in the New World or what have you are probably thinking of the Blue Man Group, aren't they? But this is very different.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a lot more entertaining for a start.
Yes.
Hmm. So he represents the green man, and the green man is like the spirit of the forest, like the kind of elder god of woods and trees, mm-hmm. who must be appeased and respected.
Yep.
Then we scared off all the goblins and devils and things. We sung
but
some
not
nice
the gnomes.
Songs.
The gnomes are allowed to stay, right?
They would be if they were not fictional, yes.
What?
Yeah. And not like the goblins and the devils. They're all real. I know, because I went to a wassail. We wouldn't all be doing that if it wasn't real, right?
Yeah, of course. It's science. Yeah. It works.
And then we drank a bunch of cider and went home. It was lovely.
So I independently also went wassailing this year in a completely different orchard in a different part of the country. And it's a similar deal, right? But my favourite bit of it was the hullabaloo, which we did. There's like a singing of songs and a reciting of poetry and the offer of toast in the tree and then cider poured at the roots of the tree. So, and then we went and we praised the spirits of the north, the east, the south and the west, which is all great. But then we did the hullabaloo, which is to scare away all the nasties, the bad spirits. Which here in Kent, you you let off whatever weapons you have. So we had a bunch of people with muskets because that's what Kent is like. And they went boom, 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 and fired off all their muskets, which was quite spectacular in the dark because they're all gunpowder, like big, you know, flashes. And then we all went, and screamed, primal screamed for a couple of minutes until all the muskets went off again. Boom, 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 boom. And it was just brilliant. It made me think that hullabaloo should just be part of our lives because...
Yeah.
It is incredibly cathartic trudging up a hill in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by trees, with a large group of people in the pitch black with just a bonfire for light. And then unseen shadowy people in the darkness letting off a load of gunpowder weaponry and then screaming, just screaming and screaming and screaming into the night. Everybody just screaming until the explosions happen again. And then at the end of that, you just genuinely feel pretty great, I'd say. It was pretty awesome because you're not generally allowed to just scream and scream and scream into the night with everybody else, however much you may feel like doing that all the time. It's generally frowned upon, isn't it?
It is, so, yeah. Yeah, I feel like I feel a bit jealous of your sailing experience because mine was quite low-key, right? It was just 50 of us in an orchard.
Right.
Banging some pots and pans.
Yeah,
and
you want more weapons going boom.
Yours seems
screaming.
A lot bigger than mine. Mm. We didn't have any muskets or any firearms at all.
Yeah, brilliantly.
There were quite a lot of kids there, so maybe that was a good thing.
No, the kids should join in.
Right.
Yeah, before we started, I could hear people letting off shotguns or whatever nearby as well. Like, there's clearly... There were other groups doing exactly the same thing on other hilltops around.
Are you sure they were part of the wassail or were they just seeing off the interlopers?
They just heard all the blood-curdling screaming and were trying to shoot all the people who sneaked into their orchards to do some screaming. Yeah, possibly. But it was great. So I think once we've seized power, I mean, we're gradually accumulating rules for when we seize power, aren't we, on this show?
Yeah, and, we seem to be, yeah.
Yeah, and so one of the rules for when we seize power is going to be a mandatory Saturday evening scream, which will change times according to the time of year, obviously, because it will be slightly after dark, whenever that is in the day.
I think it should be a half an hour after sunset every day.
Yeah, everybody has to leave their house, gather in a group. Anyone who has access to anything that explodes should explode it. And everyone will have to scream for a couple of minutes. And then more banging, any weapons to be fired, any bangers to be set off, that sort of thing. And then back into the house. And we'll all feel much better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How do you feel about mandatory toast in trees as well?
All trees should have toast in at all times, I think.
I mean, it will certainly like give a shot in the arm to the baking industry, won't it?
Yeah, it will, yeah. Yeah, I think it's a great plan.
In these troubling economic times, sounds like a great thing.
Yeah, and it'll also help with food waste as well, won't it? I'm sure a lot of bread goes stale and gets chucked out.
Like, it'll also really help with the local... it'll help with the various local rat populations as well.
Yeah, the ones that have been struggling.
Yeah. It's not often talked about, but like we used to have loads more rats than now.
Yeah.
It was a better time, wasn't it?
So anyway, I think that all sounds great. And importantly, it's all still tree related, so we're very good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea why toast? Because I was genuinely surprised by this.
It's a strange choice, isn't it?
At first I was surprised that Joel had also done a wassail the same week I did.
Yeah.
As I thought, this was a weirdly... I live in Somerset, which is a long way away from Kent, where Joel lives. Well, a long way in like British terms. If you live in Australia or America, it's like next door.
But, yeah, it's like 3 or 4 hours, right?
Maybe
something like that. Yeah.
And I assumed a lot of this was a weird Somerset thing, or at least a weird West Country thing. And especially the toast in the tree. I'd never heard that before. And I assumed it was some kind of weird local custom, but apparently not. Apparently that's a key part of it.
Yeah, I think this is just the wassail.
The toast.
But the thing is, these pagan rituals go back to the deep past, right? And the whole country would have been part of that pagan culture. So I don't think it's surprising that these...
But do you have any idea why toast? Why not bread? I don't. Why specifically toast?
I don't know that. Someone might know. If you are listening and you know, could you tell us? That
would be great. Because we're forbidden from Googling.
Yes.
We could probably easily find out, but it'd be much easier if one of you told us instead.
Yeah, no Googling on this show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Hey, Dave. I know, just to change the subject slightly, we've got exciting news this week, haven't we?
Oh, we do. Yes, you're right.
Yes, we've got a new shiny theme tune, jingle, which was prepared by Voom. And Zach.
What do you mean by Voom?
Well, Voom is my brother. He's also known as, is shortened to Voom. But the full name is Voom. And,
so is this the brother, you did, We Like the Moon with?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So is he playing, he's playing the, guitar on that, right?
He's playing the piano. He's a pianist, really. He plays the guitar as well, but he's mainly a pianist.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean on We Like the Moon, right?
He's on We Like the Moon. Sorry, I thought you were talking about the jingle. Yes, no he's playing the guitar on We Like the Moon, yes.
So he's internet famous, although he might not know it, right?
He's slightly less name visible probably than I am, but yes, he's deeply involved in all the early Rather Good stuff, yes. Yes, he's been a key component of all the songs that we've done and stuff, yeah.
Right, just to make sure people understand the pedigree of the talent involved in this.
Yes, it's very high level, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So he dropped me a line to say that he'd composed a little jingle, and so I sat down with Zach, and Zach kind of did a little bit of production on it, and it also... importantly, has an amazing a cappella triangle solo in it, which I think is probably the high point. Shall we listen? Shall we listen to it now?
Yes. I mean, like, the question everyone's probably asking is, what does a cappella triangle sound like?
And
I
question will be answered for them, won't it?
Please, yeah. Hang on.
Listen, and you'll see
what
we
mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Strap yourselves in, guys, because this is going to be pretty intense. Is everybody strapped in? Are they all strapped in? I think they're all strapped in, right?
I think all of our listeners are strapped in. Yeah. Because I personally strapped them in. That's the only reason we have any listeners.
You don't want to be standing up when you hear this because you might just fall over. Okay, here we go. Mm. 3, 2, 1.
Rather good chat, rather good chat. Let's all have a rather good chat. Rather good chat, rather good chat. La la la, it's a rather good chat.
Well, that's amazing, Joel. Well done. That's fantastic.
It's very good, isn't it?
So,
I mean, you're saying well done to me. I'm not really the person responsible for it. I did do the vocal on it, but I was merely following Voom's composition and produced by Zach,
of
as
course.
I say.
Yeah.
And the triangle solo by Tallulah. So,
This is very much a Veach family production.
Yes. There's a lot of Veaching going on there, and I shouldn't really take any of the credit for it. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's lovely, I think.
I also think it is. Should we listen to it again?
Yeah, let's.
Let's have it one more time.
Rather good chat, rather good chat. Let's all have a rather good chat. Rather good chat, rather good chat. La la la, it's a rather good chat.
Yeah, I particularly like the weird, awkward pause about two-thirds of the way through.
Yeah, originally it was timed so it flowed, and it felt like we maybe just needed to put a tiny fraction of a second break in there.
To build anticipation.
Just so that it wasn't quite right, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it was too perfect.
I mean, there's a lovely note there as well. Rather good chat.
Yes, yeah.
And
it's what's the, there's that traditional thing, I think it's like, You know, you can't make a work of art that's perfect because it might offend God in its perfection. So you have to introduce a broken stitch or a wrong brushstroke or something.
I really, right? I mean, that's not what's happened here. What's happened here is it just felt that that's what it demanded to be as beautiful as it could possibly be.
Of course, right? Yeah. I have to talk about Tallulah's amazing a cappella triangle skills as well.
I mean, I think she could go pro.
I think
so. Honest.
I mean, I've never heard an a cappella triangle sound better than that.
I think it's the best a cappella triangle I've ever heard, and she's still young. So, I mean, she could go to the conservatoire and perfect her a cappella triangle, if there is any perfecting possible from this point, because she's already at pretty much a pinnacle.
I mean, I didn't think it could be that good to start with, so... Who knows? Who knows where the upper limit is?
Yeah. I mean, watch out, world, because a cappella triangle is coming, and it's coming hard. It's coming for you, music industry. It's coming for your ears.
And specifically you, listener.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, I think that's I think that's great. So in future, I think we'll start... our episodes with that jingle, right? Instead of the traditional one that we've been using to date.
Yes, definitely.
Although we'll probably still use that as an outro. The one that we have been using, by the way, is an instrumental of Angus and Fingus and Fungus, which the very, very clever and also alluringly beautiful and nice smelling Edward Snow put together, didn't he, for us?
Edward Snow.
Yeah. Otherwise known as Skank Hammer or Micro Ed.
I'm pretending he's not know who Ed Snow is, but we worked with him for years and he's a lovely man.
He is a lovely man.
You were in a band with him, weren't you?
Yeah, but you worked with him closely for a good couple of years, didn't you?
Oh, I did. He's an absolutely lovely man, yes. Yeah.
He is, yes.
And I love him.
A very, very talented musician. So. But
I love him.
I know that he's a big enough man to recognise when an a cappella triangle has just outclassed him, despite his lifetime of musical training and technical excellence.
Yeah,
I think just the raw talent of that ding. You know, he's not going to feel bad about that pushing him out of the top spot at the front of. The Rather Good Chat podcast, I should say, which, as we all know, is the single most coveted spot any musician could get.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Like, before you recorded that, we were fighting off offers from Elton John and Paul McCartney and Bono.
Radiohead.
Yeah, yeah.
We said, no, you're too depressing. And Metallica. And we're like, no, we disagree with your stance on file sharing.
That's an old reference.
And also an old band.
I was listening to Kerrang the other day and they were playing them.
Kerrang Radio, it's still going, isn't it?
Was it Kerrang
magazine still exist?
I think it was Kerrang Radio, and maybe I'm wrong.
I've got an old friend who used to write for Kerrang. He's still a music journalist. He's
really?
A very lovely man. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Fraser Lurie, he's moved to New Zealand. Hello, Fraser, if you're listening. He's, he's great. Fantastic chap. He was one of the people who was involved in the start of XFM.
Right, okay.
There was a documentary about it recently, how it shook up the radio industry. Anyway, there you go. So trees, anyway. We're supposed to be talking about trees, aren't we?
Yeah.
Do you know?
No, I don't. Next.
Oak trees. You know when you see a resplendent oak tree in the middle of a field and it's got this kind of wide, capacious canopy?
Yeah, I do. I do know that, yes.
They're great and they're hundreds of years old. So I found out something about shipbuilding and the English countryside's relationship with the oak a while ago, which I've probably told you, have I or have I not? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Maybe not. So I've got a very good friend called Simon, who is a carpenter by trade. And right. I was going for a walk with him. He's also got a dog who's good friends with my dog. And we were going for a walk with the dogs, and he pointed at one of the trees in the field, one of these big old ancient oak trees.
The dog?
The dog is amazingly good at discussing ancient woodland.
He's a pointer, obviously.
Yes, of course. Or else he wouldn't have been able to do it.
Mm.
But then Simon took over the conversation and explained to me.
I'll take it from here, Rover. Stand down.
Yeah, his name's Kylo. We've discussed him before. He's the same right. dog who kind of leans into corners when he's sitting in the front of the car. He's great. He's a good dog. So he was saying the rules used to be in the old days when oak was one of the kind of key strategic building resources that we had, and the Navy was built of oak and stuff. The rules were, if you cut an oak down, you had to plant another oak. But there were two ways of planting them, or two ways of growing them. There are open field oaks where they're just kind of out on their own, and those are the ones that we're talking about with a kind of wide-spreading canopy.
Right,
and then they would plant some oaks amongst faster-growing trees. And the ones planted amongst faster-growing trees would grow straight up to reach the light. And those are particularly useful for your general building requirements, like planks and posts.
I would have thought they'd be good for, like, masts.
Yeah, I was about to say masts. Right, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. But the ones out in the field where you get these curved boughs, they were what they used to build the bows of the ship.
Oh.
Because they're naturally curved. So.
Oh.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously, if you're building a smaller boat with planks, you can steam and bend the wood. But if you're building a ship of the line, like a massive great galleon, you don't want to be bending a enormous oak beam, which is basically like, you know, hundreds of years worth of oak growth. So yeah, so they would actually use those boughs that were basically the right shape anyway.
Right. I think it would have saved a lot of time just to grow the tree in the shape of a galleon.
Well,
for example, you plant the tree, and once it's a sapling, you put this huge like mold over the top of it—a transparent mold, so it still gets the light and can grow, right? And you just allow it to naturally grow to fill all the inside space with this perfectly galleon-shaped mold. And once it's finished, you chop it off at the bottom, peel the mold off, and you're
brilliant,
done.
Isn't it? Like the watermelon cubes in Japan,
exactly galleons. Like that. Yes, only not cubes or watermelons,
or Japan. Yeah.
Or Japan. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah. I don't know why nobody thought of that in Elizabethan times when it would have been useful.
Maybe it was hard to make the enormous transparent molds. You'd have to use glass at the time, I guess, wouldn't you?
I was just wondering if you could grow another tree in the shape of the mold.
Right. Right.
That's probably
yes.
the easy way to do it.
But
isn't
you'd need a mold in the shape of the mold, wouldn't you?
Man, you're going to need a lot of trees for this.
Yeah.
That's probably where it went wrong, is how many trees you'd have to grow to build the mold for the mold for the mold.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I have, regarding oak trees, I have a memory that still occasionally makes me cross and ashamed.
Okay.
Which was, it's nothing at all. It's one of those stupid things where you say something slightly dumb, but then your brain won't ever let you forget it. And you were there.
I've got a lot of those. Oh, I was there, was I?
Yeah, this was years and years ago. We were on some kind of works outing in a park in London.
Okay. I'm really intrigued to know where this is going now.
I can't even remember what we were doing, but it was a leafy park in London. We were doing something, playing some kind of game or something.
Out of interest, which group of people would it be? Which kind of work outing?
It was the Viral Factory.
Mm. The good old Viral Factory.
We used to do a lot of work doing adverts and things for them.
Yeah, we had a room there or a
desk. That's where we met.
Yeah.
Anyway, so someone, and it might have been you because the kind of shirts that you wear had a shirt which had a repeating pattern of leaves on it.
Okay, yeah, that
and
could have
someone
been me.
Wondered what the leaf was, and there was some debate about what the leaf was, and I piped up and said, "Oh, that's an acorn," and then everyone around the table mocked me mercilessly for like 5 minutes. Because it's obviously not an acorn tree. There's no such thing as an acorn tree. It's an oak tree.
Oh, poor old Dave. And has that been haunting you ever since?
It has, yeah. Because I was quite new to to working with people.
Oh, Dave. Oh, that's very tragic, isn't it?
I was all like, I was young and fresh-faced and hadn't been doing this long and hadn't known any of these people very long. And they were all like quite sharp, intelligent people.
Yeah.
Yourself accepted, obviously.
I mean, I'm neither sharp nor intelligent. That's true.
That's not true. Joel is very clever. Yeah, and I was like trying my hardest to be sociable and impress people with how clever I was. And then everyone was like, ah, you idiot. And then So it's one of those things that it's such a tiny thing. I'm sure like literally no one else there remembers it or remembered it a day later.
No, of course not. But, of course not.
But it's still one of the things that occasionally pops into my head and makes me cringe.
I mean, it's a lesson there, isn't there? Because it's one of, I think everybody has those.
Yeah.
And for the vast majority of them, you're almost certainly the only person who remembers they ever happened, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though they torture you for your entire life.
Yeah.
Like the vast majority of those things, no one else will ever remember. Yeah, sorry about that, Dave. I
do remember. No, I didn't realize. You were quite nice at the time.
Right. Because I
still lived on a boat at the time, and you diffused my clear embarrassment by saying, well, at least tried to, by saying that I'm a sea Dave, not a tree Dave. Of course I don't know about trees.
Oh, well, good for me. The first and last time I was ever nice to anyone.
Okay, so I've thought about this loads over the years, and I think it's not fair because... Are there any other trees that have a fruit or a nut or a seed on them? It's not the name of the tree.
Oh, that's a good question. We were just talking about the mulberry, right?
You get almonds from almond trees. You get beech nuts from beech trees. You get apples from apple trees. Why do you get acorns from oak trees? Why are they not oak nuts or acorn trees? It's not fair. That's what I'm saying.
It's true. Walnuts, plums. Yeah, you're right. It's all of them, isn't it?
Sycamore I can't think
seeds.
Of any.
Oh, I wonder what that's about. There's probably a deep linguistic root to that.
It's probably the Normans. It's always the Normans.
It's always the Normans, like pork and Schweinfleisch. You know that thing about lamb being really unpopular in America, right? Because it's the only one of the meats that's named after the lovely fluffy animal that it comes from.
Is that true?
Yeah, they don't eat much lamb. Like, lamb's a very popular meat in England, if you're listening in America.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very hard to market it in America because of the name.
Really?
Yeah, because most of our meats are separated from the animal they come to, not for that reason, but because of Norman linguistic influence, right?
Mm. So
the ruling classes used the French after the Norman invasion. So instead of saying pig meat, we'd say porc, because French for pig is pork. And the same with boeuf for beef.
Boeuf,
et cetera, et cetera. And so it separated the name of the meat out from the animal it came from. And that's now working against lamb.
Right.
But we still, interestingly, we still say mutton for sheep meat. Mouton, which is the French for sheep. But lamb kind of escaped because it was never a specific thing.
I see. Interesting.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it?
I guess I was going to wonder, there are meats that are named after the animal, but I was thinking they're all like seafood and not very cute, I suppose.
Nobody wants to cuddle up with a squid, right?
Or a lobster, yeah.
I mean, I actually love cuddling up with squids.
Your bedroom is entirely filled with squids, isn't it?
And crabs. Don't forget the crabs.
Oh no, I'm not gonna get that.
Not lobsters though.
No,
lobsters are just poser crabs, right?
Heaven forfend a lobster sets foot in your boudoir.
I mean we should probably do an episode about crabs at some point because I've got a lot of opinions about crabs, but just
I think you've ranted about the have you ranted about the decapod thing before? I can't remember if that was before we started recording these.
I don't know. I mean, I rarely talk about anything that isn't a decapod related rant.
Yeah.
But one thing I've always felt was really unfair is that lobsters have a really cool name. You know, like that stir is like gangster, you know, like, or
mobster.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, lobster. Sounds cool. I'm sure that's part of why it's got such an appealing food. And like crab is just a bit... Like if you swapped them around, if one was called lob and the other was called crabster, then I bet the crabster would be the cool one and lob would be the one everyone's like, ugh, it's just
okay,
a lob.
Wait. This bears examination, doesn't it? You're kind of implying that sticking stir on the end of an animal name makes it cooler.
Yeah.
Would your dog Barney be cooler if he was a dogster?
He is the dogster, isn't he? Right. I should call him the dogster, yeah.
Right. Would a woodlouse be cooler if he was a woodlouster?
I didn't. So woodlouse has got a disadvantage with the louse thing, right? Because lice are just, I think anything involving louse and lice is just inherently horrible because it, you know, lice are nasty things. And they're not actually lice, are they? They're just little critters that live in wood. But the louse thing is a bit of a, it's a bit of a bum deal. You know, much the same as crabs have got a bum deal on the name, I think wood lice have because they're not lice. If they were woodsters instead of wood lice,
a woodster,
then they'd be cool, wouldn't they? Oh, look, there's little woodsters living in this log. Yeah.
I suppose the mark of coolness. Yeah, hipster, right?
Yeah, totally.
What about place names like Leicester?
It's a lot cooler than Les, right? Mm. Hey, I once went to a I once went to a mambo club with my friend James, and we were the least cool people there by miles.
I assume you mean the snake.
No, mambo, the dance.
Oh, right. And, okay.
Yeah, which is the dance you do where you, it's like double Dutch skipping, but with mambas. They called themselves mambistas at the mambo club, which I always thought was a great thing to be. Hey, I'm a mambista. Yeah.
How often do you see Easter as like a suffix of the word barista, right?
Yeah.
Mambista.
Well, again, it sounds cool, right? Because of the stir bit, like Easter is
fashionista,
just a variation,
I guess.
On, there's a lot of them, aren't there? You see what I'm getting at, right? Mm. This is why crabs have a bad deal.
Right, yeah. Sirencester. Is that better than Sirence?
Sirences.
Well, the S is optional, isn't it?
Siren said doesn't really work, does it? Whereas siren says, you know what that is, right? That's a very loud siren that warns you about the enormous lake of excrement.
Oh, no, I thought it was a children's game. Siren says, clap your hands.
That's a horrible game. It's a horrible game around the cesspit. Mm. And the siren goes, woo! It goes, hey!
And if you clap your hands when siren didn't says it, you get pushed.
You get thrown in. Yeah. Oh, man, it's a horrible game. Yeah. I don't even think you're allowed to play that game anymore.
No, you're not. Outside of very Siren specific Sester. Village rituals, you're not allowed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why they changed the name to Sirencester, because the game fell out of favour when people realised you just can't go around doing that kind of thing anymore, can you? Like, it was all right in the 80s, but it's not acceptable anymore.
Yes. Yeah. And wasn't then either. No.
No.
Still did it, didn't we? We all did it. No shame.
Yeah, I mean, who didn't? No. Yeah. It's okay. You gotta own this stuff. Different times, mate.
That's why the cesspool killing amnesty had to happen, isn't it? Otherwise society would have collapsed.
Because of all the people being in cesspools.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. So trees, anyway.
Yes. So, trees can get very old, can't they? Like
they can. That's good. That's kind of up there with they can be made of wood, can't they?
I don't mean very old compared to each other, right? Everything can be old compared to something else of its species. I mean, in terms of like human civilization.
Yeah,
there's
it's true.
Like. There's this tree in California, isn't there, that's like 5,000 years old.
Wow, that's loads of years.
I think it's called, like, Methuselah.
Yeah.
Presumably that was named late in its life. Otherwise, that would be very predictive. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, maybe it's nominative determinism, right?
Maybe
I
it is, yeah, yeah.
Who named it? Like, the were there people there to name
the
it?
Other, the other trees in the woods were called Dies Young, Doomed, Doomed from Birth. Methuselah quietly growing. Got this, guys. Yeah.
California seems to have the best trees. Oh, America has the best trees, doesn't it? They've got the giant redwoods. They've got the oldest tree in the world. Like, America's got trees.
Yeah, there are other places with good trees, though. I reckon the baobab tree is a great tree.
Right? Which one's a baobab?
The baobab is the one with the kind of, like, the fat globular trunk and then little silly wiggly branches on top. You know the ones you see elephants sheltering under in the...
Okay, right.
The arid plains. Yeah, they're funny looking things. Bulbous trunks.
Bulbous trunks. That's
bulbous trunks.
That's my rap name.
It's a great rap name, isn't it? Yeah.
Where do they grow?
Oh, I suppose where they're elephants, so I'm going to guess Africa or India.
Yeah, Africa. Yeah, they grow in the arid plains of Africa. There are other good trees, right? You know?
No, there aren't. That's it. That's the ball.
Oh, okay.
Okay, what other good trees are there?
Well, okay, I think we need to categorize this as, like, we live in England, right? So there's favorite trees that I actually know and love in England. Mm. And then there's, like, trees that look like they're pretty awesome trees, but they're actually somewhere else. You know what I mean? So yeah. There's some great trees in the Brazilian rainforest in the Amazon. You know? There's those ones, I don't know what they're called, with the really wide roots that kind of fan out and stick up in the air. And if you hit them, they go boom, boom, boom. They're like jungle drum.
Do you mean the ones that are in like swampy areas and the tree is off the water and it seems to be like on stilts? The roots.
No,
of,
oh no, that's different.
Those are
no.
Like mangroves or something, aren't they?
Those are mangroves, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's different. That's not what I mean at all. But they're pretty cool as well.
They are cool, yeah.
Yeah, they're awesome. Great for wildlife too. And they stop coastal erosion. They're great mangroves. But there are trees in the jungle. You'd know them if you saw them. But, you know, the not knowing the name thing doesn't help, does it? But they're very, very tall. But the roots kind of come out, like, imagine the root starts 10 foot up and comes out down to the ground with like a wall of wood between the ground and the root, so you get these kind of very high kind of bits of wood that are kind of little walls. Wow. I'm not describing it very well. If you hit them, they go bong. Yeah, they're good. Anyway, great trees. Good. I could trees. Be just totally making this up. I feel like my description is
I'm having trouble picturing it, to be honest.
Well, it's okay. Whatever it is you're picturing is exactly what I'm trying to describe.
Oh, brill.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was picturing a tree that naturally grows walls that you could just kind of cut off and use to make a house.
Yeah, that's ideal, isn't it? Yeah. I've got a really good tree in my garden. I've got an oak tree in my garden, which is...
Oh, do you? Lovely.
Yeah, which is according to the tree surgeon who came to have a look at it. He reckoned it was about 650 years old.
Blimey.
Which is old, isn't it? Not
did 5, he find it out
years.
By... He determined that by cutting it in half, presumably.
Of course, looking counting at the rings, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was his kind of educated guess, not a definite age.
Right.
But, you know, from someone who deals with big trees every day for a living. Mm. That was his guess. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
oak tree,
it's great.
The oak tree is a good-looking tree, isn't it? Like, that's your...
Yeah, it's a great tree. It's
classical how a tree should look. I think
it's your archetypal English tree is the oak,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I do quite like the horse chestnut as well. I think that's a lovely tree.
I'm less just fond of horse chestnuts these days because they've got this. Sorry, I should let you finish.
Oh, just because like they look nice. They're a good looking tree. But then like once a year, they have these massive white like flowering protrusions. I don't know.
Like candelabras, aren't they?
Mm, yeah, that does pop up for a couple of weeks every year. And then they grow conkers, and then they just shed an incredible amount of conkers on the floor. So under everyone is just a carpet of these spiky little nut cases containing the sort of lovely, shiny, leathery conkers underneath, inside. Like,
and of course, when we were kids, you couldn't find them, could you? Because everyone nicked them straight away to play conkers with.
Yeah.
So you never had conkers lying around on the ground. Like nowadays, you find conkers just lying around on the ground under the trees because kids don't play conkers anymore.
But, well, I mean, they don't play conkers, but my progeny, for sure, will just scoop them up, fill their pockets with them.
And, right, yeah. Collecting conkers is still cool, isn't it? Yeah. I went through a slightly tragic couple of years of collecting loads of conkers for the kids and then realising that nobody actually wanted to play conkers and it wasn't a thing.
Is it really not a thing anymore? No, they don't play the boring and painful violent game that we used to play as a kid.
Well, everyone was obsessive about it, right?
It
was like a huge deal. It was a huge deal.
So conkers,
there were literally no conkers on the ground ever. Like,
in case anyone is younger than us or not
find that hard
British,
to believe,
which seems unlikely. Conkers is a game where you get a horse chestnut, like the solid bit from inside a horse chestnut, and you drill a hole through it and put it on a string, and then you play a game where you and an opponent both have a conker on a string, and you take turns smashing your conker into the other person's conker, and the winner is the one who can destroy the other person's conker.
Yeah, and then you kind of tally up the number of kills that your conker has, right? So you get, I've got a sixer, oh, I've got an eighter.
This is how we entertained ourselves before the internet, basically.
But it was a huge deal, so you would never see a horse chestnut on the ground.
Oh yeah, it was like Saturday night prime time ITV. You'd have the conker championships.
Yeah, but you'd literally never find a conker on the ground, right? Because they were always, people were throwing sticks up into trees to get the conkers out of the tree so that they could get them before anyone else would get them and stuff. I remember once when I was at primary school, we were in a school which had a sloping playground, and my friend came in and he had a carrier bag full of conkers. Because he'd been off to see his gran or something somewhere in the countryside where there were conkers, and because we had to go down to the graveyard and throw sticks in trees to get conkers. So that anyway, and he went up to the top of the hill and he shouted scramble. Scramble was a thing when we were kids, right? Which meant you throw something and everybody has to fight each other to get the thing. And he shouted
like
scramble,
handful of change, maybe, or.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Or some sweets. I wonder if they still do. I presume people don't do that anymore. It's horrifically violent. Mm. But he shouted scramble and he poured an entire carrier bag full of conkers, which was hundreds of conkers, on top of the hill in the playground. And they all rolled down the playground. And there were hundreds of us kind of charging, fighting, knocking each other over, smashing into the tarmac. It was a tarmac playground.
Uh-huh.
Trying to get these conkers. It was mayhem. It was brilliant.
And then everybody had loads of conkers. On that day was a hero, right?
He was like a god.
That must have been legendary.
He probably still, in sad times, summons up the memory of that moment to just keep him warm in the cold nights.
Idly clicking through an Excel worksheet in his job. He thinks about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was incredible. You know, as you can tell, obviously, that moment is seared into my memory.
Did you win?
Yeah. I got one or two conkers.
How many other students did you have to kill?
I didn't actually kill anybody, although obviously we all fought each other.
So yeah, that's the horse chestnut tree. That's why I think.
And there were some cheats, right? And there was three methods of having an altered conker that I remember, right? There was having a conker from the previous year that had survived the previous year's battle.
Was that, and is then that they cheating? Go, they have to be...
No, it's okay. That's allowed, right?
Yeah.
And that's a Stone Ager. And the Stone Agers were hard and really, really stone-like. That's why they were called Stone Agers. And they were really hard to beat. That was great. But it was quite unusual for a conker to survive the whole season, right?
Yeah.
Especially undamaged.
Once, yeah.
And then...
Yeah, but I mean, once it's fossilised, it's going to be quite hard to beat, isn't it?
Yeah, they were great. But then there were a couple of cheats, one of which was to put them in the oven. But you could kind of tell when people had dried them out in the oven because they looked like they'd been in the oven.
Right, yes.
And the other one I never understood, which was pickling them. People used to say you can pickle them.
You put them in vinegar, right? This is a thing.
It didn't work. It just made them soft, so they exploded.
Mm.
And like, what the hell are you doing? Like, my dad pickled some Conkers for me. I said, Dad, this is just going to make them soft, and it did. They got destroyed. He's like, oh. Well, there you go.
I feel like your school took Conkers way more seriously than mine.
Am I an outlier here?
I don't know.
Conkers were a huge deal.
I've only got a data point of view in me.
Right, okay.
In our school, it was just a thing you did. Like on the lunch break, you'd whack some Conkers. There wasn't any science behind it. And we all heard about people putting them in vinegar and stuff, but no one ever bothered.
Oh, right. No, okay. That's an interesting data point you've got there. Because maybe I am an outlier. You see, what I'm doing here is I'm inferring from my personal experience that it's the same for everybody, and maybe it just wasn't. But certainly where I grew up in Southeast London in the 70s and early 80s, Conkers was a massive deal.
I have to say as well, I don't remember local children harvesting every single Conker from a tree. I remember them just lying around as a kid.
No, you'd never find a Conker lying on the ground in Forest Hill. Like,
you see, I grew up in the countryside and you grew up in London. Maybe that's the main difference.
So, yeah, you guys had a glut of Conkers, right?
Yeah, must be.
Yeah, because there were some Conker trees in the graveyard, and so you'd have to go down to the graveyard.
And, right.
Or you could go to the park.
And it had to be a waste of time going to the park. You had to go to the graveyard, and it had to be midnight.
Yes. But the thing is, people would throw sticks into the trees and you'd get the Conkers down before they were ripe, and then you'd open them up and they were still soft and a bit white and useless.
Yeah.
So it's kind of self-defeating. It's a classic bit of human resource over-exploitation where the competition meant they were harvested too early.
I guess if there were none on the ground, then having a soft white Conker was better than having no Conker.
Yeah, although you're going to lose with that Conker.
So, yeah, but I mean, if you don't have a Conker, you've already lost. At least there's a chance.
That's true. Yeah. And then towards the end of the season, people would just start lying about, because at the start of the season,
they just start lying about
nunners or winners.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they start lying about the score of their Conker.
Of course.
If you beat a sixer, you get six, right? So you go from a oneer to a sevener.
Ooh.
And then you've got a sevener and someone beats that and they get seven.
Wow.
And so towards the end, you wouldn't risk, you've got like a tenner or something, you wouldn't risk fighting someone who's got a brand new Conker, which is just a nunner. So people would start lying about how many their Conkers had, so the numbers would inflate rapidly towards the end of the season.
Right.
You're like, oh, I've got an 83er, and everyone would kind of know at this point.
You don't, do you?
The numbers had gone out the window. Yeah. But we all used to play along with it anyway.
So this game involved intentionally or not, getting whacked on the knuckles by Conkers quite a lot as well, right?
There's a very specific way you had to hold your Conker. You dangle it on the string, and then to fight with your Conker, you kind of hold it between two fingers and tension it with your other hand, and then you whack as hard as you can your Conker into the other person's Conker, which is fine if you hit the Conker, but if you hit their knuckles, it really hurts.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, there were lots of other rules, which I won't go into, but basically you had to smash the other person's Conker off of the string.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the key. And you could use round Conkers, which I, to be honest, I felt like a round Conker is the way. There were people who used to get the ones where you get multiple ones in the same pod and they have a sharp edge. They were called cheese cutters.
Right.
And, like,
oh, the idea the being the sharp edge would act as a sort of axe blade.
Yeah, and you would use the cheese cutter edge first and try and get the hole where the string goes through the Conker. You would always aim for that and try and cause a crack at that weak point.
I see.
And then you would aim for the crack with the edge. So the cheese cutter demanded a specific type of play. But I felt like, on balance, a big round Conker was better because the cheese cutter had the weakness that it had a flat bottom, so you know what I mean, like it was easier to hit it with full force down on the knot that was holding it onto the string.
Yeah
Whereas with the round one, people would generally strike glancing blows.
So your children are older than mine. You've been through the whole schooling system with them in modern times.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people think Conkers is banned in schools these days. Is that true?
I'm not aware of it being banned in most places. I think it's just that the kids don't want to play it.
Because they've got video games and the internet. Like, why,
yeah,
why
yeah.
would you?
I mean, there was talk. I remember I did kind of inquire about it, and there was talk about how they weren't allowed to take Conkers in and play them in school. And we tried to organise, like, you know, with some other dads my age, like a local little Conkers game.
Right.
And the kids just weren't into it, basically. They didn't want to learn how to do it. They just, because it's not a cultural thing, they're not invested in it, right? Conkers was such a big deal because it was such a big deal. It's kind of self-sustaining.
I think we should bring back Conkers and also that game where you have like a hoop and a stick. You know? The hoop and stick game. That, you know.
The one where you roll a hoop down the road with a stick.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. You see it a lot in Victorian paintings and nowhere else.
I think that had died out before my time, if I'm honest.
Man.
But
kids today. But once
we've seized power, Conkers will be mandatory, right?
That's, yes.
Yeah.
And the hoop and stick game. Yeah.
There will be a National Conkers League and it will be on telly every Saturday night at 6 o'clock. Not that anybody watches the telly anymore, but they'll have to watch that.
It'll be presented by Bradley Walsh and Anton Deck and Claudia Winkleman, all of them.
Yeah, and The Rock.
The Rock.
He's probably really good at Conkers if he gets going.
Well, that's because his Conker is just a rock painted to look like a Conker.
He's cheating, basically. Yeah. That's the kind of cheating that no one ever actually did at my school.
Did you ever cheat?
Well, I mean, no, but we did experiment with ovened Conkers and pickled Conkers, but not with any success. So we did kind of muck about with that stuff, but I never tried to use them in actual competition.
In anger, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anger being the operative word.
So we should probably start wrapping up. We've been doing this for a while.
We have talked quite a lot about tree-related things, haven't we?
Unusually,
Conkers is
we've
trees,
actually talked
right?
about
yeah.
trees and the produce of trees, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this podcast is mostly about Conkers.
It is, yeah. It's
but
all conquering.
Good.
Yeah.
So I've got to ask you, bearing in mind all the things we've learned about trees today.
Yeah.
Trees, yes or no?
Yes.
I think
trees are a thumbs up from me.
I think yes, too. I think the sight of a big, wide, old oak tree in the middle of a field in the English countryside makes my heart feel glad. So, yes, trees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I haven't talked about this at all, but I've planted loads and loads of fruit trees. And there is something about the process of growing a tree, which is a long-term investment, like a many, many year
5,000
investment
in some cases.
Of time and interest. Yeah. Which I find just wonderful. I think it's a wonderful thing. So yes, trees, hooray! Thumbs up trees. After the very, very bloody coup, trees will be mandatory.
Yes. The rule will be if you chop down a tree, you have to plant a tree.
Yes. And everybody must have trees, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Everyone must have at least...
Regardless of...
At least 50 trees in their house.
Yeah, if you live in a flat, I guess they're going to have to go in pots, right?
No, you just fill your flat to a depth of about 2 or 3 feet with soil. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yep, fine. Grow them by the windows, out the windows when they get too big for the ceiling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Perfect.
Smash a hole in the wall, whatever.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Brilliant.
So
trees.
What do you want to talk about next time?
How about crabs? Should we talk about crabs next time?
We could do crabs. Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Let's do crabs next time.
I know at
crabs,
least
should we...
at least 1.5 facts about crabs, so that's great.
That's really good. Yeah. I mean, we could widen it out to crustaceans, but maybe we should just say crabs.
I think crabs.
We'll see where it leads
There's loads
us.
To
yeah.
say about crabs.
Crabs are great. I love crabs.
I wish I was a crab.
Okay, brilliant. See you next time.
Bye-bye,
for crabs.
Joel. Hooray.
Bye, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Bye.